Hola, soy Paola Marizan, and in this episodio, we're going to go back in Cuban history. But before we can look back, let's talk about el presente, the present. Last year, Cuba announced that in March, en marzo del 2018, they will have elections to choose new members of the National Assembly. See, this is historical, because after that, the new parliament will choose the country's next president. Raúl Castro, or the Castros for that matter, will no longer be in power after 6 decades of dictatorship. Esto es ¿Qué pasa Midwest?
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 Telling the stories of Latinos from the homeland to the heartland. In los 50, Fidel Castro headed an attack against the barracks Moncada of Santiago de Cuba, east of La Habana. Castro was arrested and convicted to 15 years of prison. But 2 years later, he, along with other rebels, was amnestied. After that, Castro led guerrilla fights, one of the causes of the United States removing their military support to the Cuban government. In 1959, Fidel then became first minister, helping implement politics of nacionalización and approaching the Soviet Union. The U.S. imposed the economic embargo to the island that same year and broke all diplomatic relationships with Cuba. Ese mismo año, a strong migratory current of doctors and teachers began towards the U.S., and Fidel Castro declares the socialist character of the Cuban Revolution. But in 1991, the country falls in a strong economic crisis. Today, relations with Cuba have backpedaled after the last administration began dialogue and trade with the island. Hoy día, el presidente no está de acuerdo con que nos acerquemos a la isla. So what do Cubans in the Midwest think about all this? Would they go back to an island they haven't seen in decades or never? Do Midwestern Cubans miss the island they remember, a communist Cuba? We went to Ohio to talk to Juan Guardia, a Cuban-American who saw his break to visit the island of his parents shut down when relations with the U.S. became cold again.
Juan Guardia, Assistant Vice President for Student Affairs and Dean of Students at the University of Cincinnati. So I've been in Cincinnati about a year and a half, but I previously lived in Iowa for 3 years and in Chicago for 3 years. So probably this is my seventh and a half year in the Midwest total. I will tell you that when I moved, and Iowa being the first place in the Midwest that I moved to, huge culture shock. Not as many Latinos, not as many Latin-owned restaurants and so forth. Very nice people. People in Iowa were really great, but it was just a very different culture shock and different environment than what I was used to. Having grown up in South Florida, Miami, very ethnic and racial folks all over the county, all over the city. I can speak Spanglish, I can speak Spanish. That completely went out the window when I was in Iowa, just because there weren't other folks there who either spoke Spanish or Spanglish, or the folks that didn't look like me. So when I was in Iowa, when I was in my PhD program at Iowa State, I was literally the only Latino male in my cohort in my PhD program. Iowa specifically, it was the opportunity to get my PhD. And then here in Cincinnati, again, another employment opportunity. So I've never been, nunca ido a Cuba. So my parents came over from Cuba in the early to mid-60s, met here, married here. My brother and I were born here. So my brother and I have not had the opportunity and or privilege to go to Cuba. I'm dying to go. I thought I would be able to go. I thought before our current president redacted the policy that we would have more of an opportunity to go. But it was only open for a year, year and a half. And I'm thinking, oh, this will, now it's open, so I can go anytime. And then he redacts it. And I was like, oh, well, now I don't have the opportunity to go as openly or as freely as other folks had. So as much as I'd like to go and still would want to go, I think it might be a little bit more challenging and harder now.
And does your family ever talk about Cuba, tu mamá y tu papá?
Oh, my God. Claro que sí. Oh, yeah. I remember growing up as a child, mommy and papi would always talk about what Cuba was like. I think not only for them to continuously remind themselves of where they came from, but also to instill in my brother and I that we were Cubano, we're Queromo Cubano Americano, and that this is what our families are like when they were living in Cuba. So that's something that we would always continuously hear, like, I knew about José Martí from my father very early on, just as later on I would learn about George Washington in the United States. So I was like, okay, two different type of patriots, one from this country, one from my my parents' country. Even now, I'm 45, I mean, I'll be 45, I'm 44 now. Even when I talk to my parents now, they'll always talk about what their experiences were like in Cuba. So much so that they've now lived in the United States longer than they've lived in Cuba. Mommy came over when she was a teenager, and so did my father. And so because they've lived in the United States longer, I think they look at it from the lens that they treasure those memories from being infants to children to their teenage years in Cuba before they had to leave. And I think that they try to continuously share those experiences and those stories with my brother and I and the rest of our family, just to be as a reminder of who they are and where they came from. For my parents, before the Castro regime came in 59, they had a pretty good upbringing in that my father and my mother were both from lower middle class in Cuba, but they had everything they needed. They had the necessities. They had plenty of friends. They were in school. Almost like they didn't know any better because that was their life. And then the Castro regime came in and everything turned on itself. And so that they were being told by their parents, this is our opportunity to better ourselves because we're going to have to leave because the way communism was taking over the country at that point, it wasn't giving them or any of their families any specific rights. And so they looked at it from the lens of they had a really good experience and upbringing there, but they also were being told by my grandparents, we have to leave because we need to have a different experience for you folks because we know that what's about to come down, it's not what's being told and it's not going to be in our favor. And so, yeah, I think what they knew as young men and women growing up there was a pretty good experience for them. That it's one of the questions I've always asked my parents, both mommy and papi, was, did you ever think you would ever leave your home country to come here? And they were like, no, absolutely not. My dad graduated high school. My mom was able to finish all the way through maybe ninth grade in Cuba. And they would have never fathomed that they were leaving their home country to come to a different country, let alone a country that they didn't speak the language. And so something they didn't intend to do, but they ended up having to do. And I understand. I understand why they ended up having to do it. So, and I'm thankful because had they not done it, I don't think it would open up the doors and my brother and I would have had the opportunity to be citizens of this country and so forth.
And have they talked about going back?
So, yes. Yeah. So my parents went back in 79. That was the first time they went back after they got here in the early 60s. And when they went in 79, I was young. I was only like six. They talked about how different it was back then. Just the way the communities that they were raised in didn't look the same. They saw some of their like middle and high school friends. But one of the things that they had acknowledged even then when they went back, because they were in their 30s, that their friends looked older just because of the stress of life that was going on in Cuba and some of the advantages that my parents had here. So they noticed that very early on as I got older and I talked to them about their experience, the opportunities they're not giving there. And that was literally the last time they went. After that, my parents came back. And when I talked to them as I got older, they said 79 was probably the last time we went, and we have no intention of going back after that. I've even asked my mom a few times. I said, hey, now that, well, when it was open, would you go back with me? And she was unsure. She's like, no sé si quiero ir because it's not going to look the same. All of her family was already here. Even though she may still have friends there, her childhood friends, it just would be a very different experience. And even now, she's like, you know, at this point in her life, my mom was like, I really don't have any gana to go back. So, and I respect that. When it opened up, I think that was an opportunity for Americans, and then above and beyond that, Cuban Americans, to go home and see where their parents were from. That was very exciting to me. I think now that it's been redacted, it's strained itself back again. I would prefer that it be a little bit open. I know I have friends on both sides of the fence that I think they think it's a great opportunity that it's open. Then I have friends that are like, no, we want to contribute to the communist regime and so forth. I get their perspective as well, but I also look at it from the lens, I'm not trying to go there to contribute. I would want to go there to do more of a learning opportunity personally and professionally, mostly to see where my family's from. As my mother and my father have both said, to see where some of our family está enterrado, like just to see whether, you know, to see. My dad's from El Vedado, my mom's from La Habana, and just to be able to be like, okay, so now I can visually see where mommy and papi grew up.
What would it mean to have a democratic Cuba or try to transition into that? What would that mean?
I think it's a great idea. I think it won't happen as quick or as immediate as other folks may think. I think, unfortunately for the folks, the Cubano that are on the island, they've been, I would say probably a majority of them, in my opinion, have been so ingrained that this is what their country's been like, that for someone to come automatically and then to just to come in and then push these democratic ideals in their face might not turn well for a majority of those other individuals. You know, it's funny, in South Florida, a lot of folks will say, you know, if that were to happen, we would have this flood. I do think we would still have enough, a majority of folks, or a good amount of folks that would want to leave the island to come to the United States for two reasons. One, because I would say probably a majority of their family's over here already, and so they want to be reconnected with their family. I completely understand that. But I would also say it might be the more additional opportunities for them. But then I also think there's other folks, maybe an older generation in Cuba, that are just, they're settled in their ways, and that's what they know. And it would be a pretty large culture shock to come here. I know one of my own personal examples was my dad brought, this was 1985, so I was about 12 years old. My dad brought my abuelo over from Cuba, and my abuelo probably was in his 60s. So all he knew was Cuba. Brought him over to South Florida. My grandfather was in total culture shock, completely. And unfortunately, he ended up taking his own life. Yeah, I would hear him tell my father all the time, he'd say, I just want to go back. Like, just take me back.
So, as time has passed by, y han habido tantos cambios, no tan solo en póliza, sino también en culturas and customs, Cuban Americans and the ones who fled the island during the start of the regime are more comfortable staying in the country they now call casa, home. The policies between the U.S. and Cuba are still rocky, but like Juan, some are still hopeful to experience the authentic Cuban cultura. Are you un cubano en el Midwest? Share your story with us through our website, quepasapodcast.com, and subscribe for more stories of Latinos in the Midwest. Gracias por escuchar. Esto es ¿Qué pasa Midwest?
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 Telling the stories of Latinos from the homeland to the heartland.